Blog Talk Radio.
What's up, world, and welcome to Realty Universal Radio, the fastest hour in radio, no doubt about it. I'm Randy Zachary, and this is a show about real estate, about God, about life, about giving back, about being the change in the world that you'd like to see. I'm privileged to bring to you Natalie Mullinex and Realty Universal, a company dedicated to excellence. Realty Universal is a revolution founded on a very simple principle. We believe sellers and buyers should have choices. We have been a pioneer in the menu program system. More on that, of course, a little later. Natalie Mullinex, president and founder of Realty Universal, averaged over $80 million a year in sales. Natalie has been in the top 1% in the country for over 25 years. And number one in Hawaii for 2 years prior to stepping back to building Realty Universal. She's an accomplished speaker, writer, consultant, trainer, and, oh, by the way, mother. She travels worldwide, literally, spreading the gospel, if you will, of Realty Universal. And she joins us now. Hey, Natalie.
Hey, Randy. How are you?
We're doing good. We're doing good over here on the left coast of the United States of America. How are you? How's it going? I know we always catch up here at the beginning because we're both kind of busy, and during the week it's hard to connect.
No, all's really good, and we want to send our prayers out and condolences to all the victims from 9/11. It's hard to believe that that's already been 12 years ago, isn't it? It's really hard. I remember I was here in Hawaii and calling the DuPont Registry, doing an ad there in Florida, and I was calling them about advertising, and it was like 9 in the morning here, which would make it 3-year time. I had just been up for a little while, and I was calling them about it to the ads, and like, Natalie, have you turned the TV on? Do you know what's going on? And it was like, whoa, you know, it was really so tragic. And in Hawaii, everything just got really still because, of course, no mail went out, no planes went out, nobody could go anywhere for, oh, I guess, over a week. So it was very, very, it was very weird and eerie here. And I remember feeling so helpless because I know so many people on the East Coast and being in Maryland for so long, and I actually knew people had relatives in the building, and you just feel like you want to go help and you can't help. And so my, you know, prayers and condolences to everybody. It's that's something that's never going to go away, you know, type of the repercussion.
It's I remember I was doing a radio morning show and I was pulling in to the radio station about a quarter to six, you know, Pacific time, 6 a.m. and that's just when it happened, about, you know, 8:47 Eastern, so it was like 5:45. And I was just listening to the news. I like to always catch up on the news just before I go in and do my show, just in case, you know, there's something to talk about. And, yeah, about 7, you know, 10 till, they came out with this special report that a plane had hit the building. And I remember thinking, again, I went right to, wow, what a tragic accident, you know. And I immediately thought, you know, small plane, private plane, you know. And then when they said it was an airliner, you went, oh, no. And, and then, so I think we all remember, you know, where we were.
Yeah. I have a cousin that was in the hospital there, and works at the hospital there in D.C., and the casualties were coming in left and right, and it just, it's such a, it's a really a very shocking experience, very, very, very hard on the families. And the things changed drastically in the U.S. after 9/11 too, is when it comes to safety, didn't it? Just everything.
And they've been showing, you know, those,
They've
been showing those, you know, those specials that they show every year, and kind of reliving it all, and it, you know, it just kind of brings it all back. And I think about how shocking that was. And then, of course, a year ago, this is the one-year anniversary of the Benghazi tragedy, which is a whole other conversation. You and I could take an hour on.
It just shows us that we think we're so safe everywhere, and we are. I think in the U.S. we're relatively safe compared to some places, but it just shows us that you know, you never know. You have to really live each day to the fullest, have your faith and trust, and be able to really look at what's important, right? It's really, I mean, there were stories of people that called that knew they weren't going to get out of the building, calling their relatives saying, I love you, you know, I want to, you know, bye, and because they knew, you know, or even on the plane, when the plane was coming through Pennsylvania, you know, the people that died on the plane, they were calling saying, you know, I'm sorry, you know, it's just really, really hard. It's just a tragedy, and so our hearts go out to everybody because, you know, we, when it's close to you, when it's your relative and your family, it's never gonna leave, you know, and difficult thing. I hope right now, I pray for these people in, you know, the Syria too, when you see the what's going on in many parts of the country, and that's what I really love when we have the guests on the show that from that are doing missionary work and helping, and because, you know, we have it so well in the U.S., even though you see a lot of people that don't have it well, or we all go through trials and tribulations. I really, my hat's off to everybody helping in third world countries, and I keep thinking about, I want to get into this thing with the wells, Randy, I really, really do, because it's only $5,000 you know, donate to put a well in these, some of the third world countries that can help a whole community, and that's on my agenda, to really figure out how we can help and do that in that area, because we all can't do everything, right? But we can certainly do something, and everything helps. So it just brings it all to the forefront more and more when you go through this. And today's show, the first half, is on negotiation and how to have a win-win situation. And, of course, our first half is real estate, so we're going to be talking about negotiating skills. If you're buying or selling a house, these skills also apply to you in everyday life, because we're dealing with people every day, and we want one thing and they may want another. So it's really nice to be able to make it a win-win situation so that both people are happy and not pulling a tug-of-war and miserable. And then the second half, Randy, we have a guest that I'll let you tell about.
Yeah. We've had Doug Frazier on before, and he was involved with an organization called TellAsia.org. Well, this time Doug is going to join us, and he's also bringing the founder and director of TellAsia, Leanna, is going to be with us, and she's going to kind of share a little more in depth about, you know, what they do, why she's doing it, and I think much like Bill. You know, Bill Such last week from the Jesus Center. Again, this is somebody making a difference. And, you know, I just saw a video on, and it was titled The Crazy Ones, and it talked about people who changed the world. And most of them were thought of, you know, as crazy in some form or fashion.
At the time.
You can't do this, you know, Einstein and,
right.
You know,
right.
all that. And you just, you know, Henry Ford. And I love Henry Ford's quote, if I had listened to popular opinion back in the day, I would have been trying to figure out how to make faster horses, you know. In other words, people had no idea what he was talking about a car, you know. And I love that. And so anyway,
ahead
people
of
are making
time, ahead of their time, huh?
Yeah, and in this day and age, I think people who are getting us kind of our heads turned away from, you know, the amassing of wealth and you know, money, and, you know, using money to change the world, that's huge. Like you said,
yeah, let's
well.
Make it, but let's give it away to help people. Let's go do it, you know, instead of, we want to empower it, people, not disempower them, but understand it's just a tool. It's not, it's really, it's amazing. It's amazing that, I do think a lot of that's with the social networking and everything. I guess we get to so many more people. Or, you know, or in general, everybody gets to reach more people so they can, it's so nice that we're having more of the movement. There's always been people wanting to give and serve for years, but now it seems like people are able to get involved much easier now because of the social networking and the internet, I think.
Yeah.
But,
yep.
Pretty amazing.
Yeah.
So,
that's the second half, yeah. So let's go dive in. I love this idea of the art of the win-win, the art of negotiation. So And I'm sure in your experience you've had obviously lots and lots of experience at this, and there are ways to do it and ways not to do it, right?
Yeah, you know, the one thing about buying and selling a house, typically you're not going to know those sellers. If you're the buyer, you're not going to really know the sellers for life. If you're the seller, you're not going to know the buyers for life. I mean, that, you know, there are situations where people know everybody, but many times you're just dealing with them in that situation. You may not even ever meet the seller or buyer. For example, in Hawaii, you know, the negotiations, say the agent broker is doing the negotiations, and when you go to closing, the buyer signs separately, the seller signs separately, so everybody isn't meeting at the table. In a lot of states, you have a closing, a settlement, and everybody comes to the table together and signs. So depending on where you're doing business, you know, you may meet the seller, you may not, sometimes you may meet on an inspection, but so it's a type of transaction where people are kind of want to get the best that they can get. The seller wants the most money and wants what they want. The buyer wants the best deal. A little different than when you're dealing in day-to-day negotiations, win-win with your family, with your partner, you know, spouse, partner, friends, you know, because we're always having to negotiate a little bit, right? We want this and they want that. And if you can make it a win-win, it's ideal. And if everybody goes into this with I only want my way or the highway and plays such hardball, it makes it very difficult. So, and I've seen deals fall apart over the smallest things just because somebody got an attitude and I don't like that person, I'm not selling my house to that person no matter what they do because I don't think they're going to be good for my house. I mean, the things that are like, why? Like, what? Are you serious? No, but they mean it at the time. They really mean it. And typically it's just because either something turned them off or something. And I've seen people say, I'm walking away from the table for $100. And, of course, usually, you know, it's easy. Okay, here's $100. It's not worth this, you know. And then they feel like they won. So but it's really important to say, when you're the buyer or the seller, what's most important to you? Look at the what's the most important in this negotiating to you? What's least important? What can you get a spare? Of course, we're you know explaining this as far as buying or selling a house, but what do both people have to have? How can people save face? So you look at these items. You want to put down though what's non-negotiable. Okay, it's non-negotiable that there must be a roof on this house, right? It must have a structure. Or it's non-negotiable if, say, you need a certain school and the house is or isn't there. So there's all these wish lists have. But when it comes down to where you found the right property and you're negotiating, whether you're the buyer or the seller, and of course, we never have enough time to go through all the details on our show. And for more information, you can go to realtyuniversal.com. And we can also place you with somebody that can help you negotiate your deal. But what's most important? So if with the seller, they won't have a bottom line number, but maybe they can get to that in different ways than just with the price. The buyer, they want to get a certain deal. I've seen things where a seller throws in an oriental rug and it's worth $10,000 and we're $5,000 off on the deal and they throw in an oriental rug that maybe it was worth 10, but, you know, it could be different market, et cetera, or hard to sell, and they throw it in. And the buyer's happy because they feel like they were only 5,000 apart, and now it's going to work, and they're happy paying more. You know, it's just, so it's really important to keep our attitude good in a negotiation because sometimes, especially in house selling or house buying, it's a personal effect. It's your personal item that you're going to go in, and it's your family, it's your lifestyle. Sellers have years of memories in these homes, so they're looking at it so much more personally rather than just a business transaction. So, you know, it really is, there's an art to it, because if you can try to keep it a win-win and always think win-win. So, say you're the buyer You can only qualify for so much. You want to get this, you want to get that, but you don't care if they leave all the window treatments now, which are included in the sale. You don't care if they leave certain fixtures that are affixed to the property, and you're willing to negotiate on that. Say you're a seller, and you need your bottom line number, but you could sell it with furnished, not furnished. You actually really need to stay in the property maybe a month or two after closing. So there's some negotiating room there. You're willing to give up a little on this item because you're going to get on another item. So it's really important, because if you go into a blind, okay, I'm just throw me out what you want. And, you know, it's really important to see what's most important, what's least important, what do you both have to win. And it's amazing how people will feel like they won on the smallest items, if everyone's comfortable. Right?
That's
no,
cool.
Isn't it? Yeah, well, it's like if everybody's happy, and you know, okay, and then, okay, well, I'll give you this. Or, you know, I really wanted that chandelier, but you really want it, and I just fell in love with it, which it should have been taken down before when it was listed. But the sell, you know, go ahead, you keep that then. Okay, because I your house is great. I love it. You've really taken a great job, but, you know, done a great job with it. So you'd be amazed how there's these little items that each side can concede on that's going to make somebody happy. And that's where, you know, a really good agent or broker comes in and stays in as the middle person to negotiate both sides to keep everybody happy. Because, you know, legally you have to say and point out certain things. You're obligated to look out for all parties and make sure that everything's disclosed properly and both sides are not getting ripped off, so to speak. But that doesn't mean legally, if the seller goes, I didn't like that person. Did you hear what they said? I don't want to sell them my house. They're an idiot. They're jerks. They're whatever. You don't have to pass that on to the buyer when you're negotiating, right? You know what I mean? Like, is it necessary to say that? And to the buyer, say, you know, you see certain things that people just, that you're able to keep it nice and professional and win-win and kind of be that buffer in between, because you'd be amazed how emotions get when people are in or negotiating. And, you know, I don't know, on a personal level, sometimes people say, do you want to be right or do you want to be happy?
Yeah.
And or do you always want to be right or do you want to be happy? And, yeah, there's a line in the sand, a line that has to be drawn on, this is non-negotiable, yet what isn't? You know, do you really care about all these other chattels that go, well, I thought that's in the price of the house. That's supposed to be whatever. Do you really care about that? Well, you're going to redo it. You're going to decorate. You're going to do what you want. Okay, so let's put that on the side. This isn't as important as you get in this house. What about, you know, so I'm going back and forth between the buyer and the seller in what I'm explaining. And it sounds so simple, doesn't it, Randy? Doesn't it sound like when you're hearing me talk, doesn't it sound like piece of cake? But it's not so simple, because it sounds so simple, but it isn't so simple, because people get their hair up, you know, in a tizzy if they're feeling like they're not getting their way. Sometimes you'll have husband and wife, you know, want this or that. And you know, so you have to really kind of see what's going on and what's important and not get offended. Because if it's your house and it's very easy to get offended by some of the comments, and then put your wall up. So we just wanted to go over some items today that just make it a win-win. Just keep that out of it. Just kind of stand back
Well, and I know you as the kind of sometimes the go-between, or the, you know, if the broker or agent is brokering the deal. You know, you're trying to make the deal happen, and often there is, most of the time, I would say, you know, some level of negotiation for various things, from price to, you know, things that stay in the house and all that stuff. And you know, again, and I think this goes, though, it really does go beyond real estate. It goes into life. I mean, obviously, life skills of not allowing other people's, you know, weirdness or low energy, you know, to impact your, like I think Wayne Dyer says, you know, not letting other people's decision to vibrate at a lower frequency, you know, impact my decision to vibrate at a higher frequency, you know.
And when it goes into the life skills, really, when it goes into the life skills with other people in your relationships, when you've had these relationships maybe all your life or through your marriage or through your, you know, relationships or at your kids, and, you know, you both already come to the table with expectations and almost, I know how they're going to react. I know what they're going to do because this is what they've always
mm-hmm.
done. So, of course, they're going to do this. And then all of a sudden, you're already preconceived in your ideas, and maybe that's forcing you to be just a little tougher than you needed to be or, you know, judgmental, et cetera. So, yeah, very, very, can be very difficult, you know, and if you can pull back and go, all right, do I really have to be right this time? Do I really have to get my way? I mean, if you think about it, right, is it more important to me to love this person, appreciate the person for who they are, and say, so in that sense, and it's not being manipulative, you could say, well, okay, we're going to do it your way this time, and then next time when we go over here, I get to pick the movie, okay? Is that a deal?
Yeah.
Bring up something that you like, right?
Yeah.
Is that kind of, and that's not really manipulative because it's kind of like, okay, let them win this time, and then I get my way that time, but not that way. Is that fair? And the other person goes, all right, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's ways to diffuse, or if you stand there and say, no, I want it this way. I want it this way. I'm not talking to you. And the other one goes, well, fine, then don't talk to me. I don't care. I don't, you know, and you're back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, it's really, it's amazing when you look at the small techniques that you can use that, and it really, I think, comes from the heart and love. And if you go into it saying, hey, win-win, win-win.
Mm-hmm.
What
yeah.
does he want? What does she want?
Yep.
What does the other side want? What do I want? And that's one thing in the industry I've always, for years, done because I really do care. I really, really, from the bottom of my heart, care. I've always gone into all negotiations with, how do we make this a win-win?
Yep.
And now we're talking mostly residential real estate, commercial real estate. You're going to have many other things depending on the level of the project and monies and different and contract issues and attorneys involved and many, many other issues that may not be non-negotiable because they need certain things covered legally. But then pricing and terms and negotiation is negotiable. And when you're negotiating in different parts of the world, you need to know who you're negotiating with because you need to know how they feel, how they think. Because if you don't, you may come off already as disrespectful and
yeah.
with an attitude. And you're like, I don't have an attitude. I'm from the East Coast. This is how I do things. I'm really direct. The other person says, I'm all the way from the East, all the way on the other side of the world, and you're just too direct for me. Do you see what
yep.
I mean? Like, so that's
yep.
when we come into buying and selling in properties. We have to really know who we're dealing with because then we can show respect and love and come from a win-win, right? Women,
yeah, I love that.
I mean, I take it for granted being a woman that, hey, we're allowed to play ball. We're allowed to play ball. Well, in different countries, women are still second-class citizens, and
mm-hmm.
you know, you go into Dubai and try to go play ball. I mean, like right away, and you're a woman. What are you doing? And I'm not, you know, I should say different places where you're gonna. Not, and I'm saying that facetiously, but truly, there's many places where we're still second-class, right? And we have to be careful. So getting down into the nitty-gritty of we're talking about a real estate show, selling or buying a house, and we're talking about your property. Well, that may sound simple to us, but to the buyer and the seller, this is emotional. This is where they're going to be. And they're also
yep.
bringing other baggage to the table. What about, you have all kinds of situations going on. What about somebody's getting remarried and the woman's living in the husband's house that he lived in with another wife?
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
they're only selling to make the wife happy because they need to buy another property because he'd be just fine staying in that house. But because
yep.
he understands she's not, they're buying something else, right? Well,
yeah.
well, these types of things you're bringing into the table, you kind of get to know if you're the agent or broker. The middle person needs to kind of know more about what their motives are, what the pluses and minuses are, because they may be, sometimes people are downsizing and they don't want to downsize. So they're having to, oh, that's never going to do. Oh, that's not good. And they have to look at other items that are going to make them feel comfortable to be in this house. The big picture, this is lifestyle. It doesn't matter if it's small, big, or whatever. It's how you're going to live, how you're going to feel in that home every day. Because if
yeah.
you're going to be, if you're going to be complaining about the home because you're downsizing, then you know what? Don't buy yet. Go work out these other issues
mm-hmm.
to figure out what's going to make you happy and then go buy so that you're happy, because then if you buy and you already have a... So see how these other things that have nothing to do with that property... Do you
yeah.
see how it can play into everything? So So yeah, that's why, to me, as a middle, but how do you know if you're selling it yourself? Like, we have a lot of sellers go into for sale by owner programs, menu system programs, limited service. So they may not have the third party negotiating, and they're negotiating. So keep it simple. See what is most important, least important. How can you make it a win-win? And don't take it personally. That's a big thing I can tell you. If you're selling your own house or you're buying a property and there's no agent or broker involved to kind of mitigate and to negotiate, to kind of keep it, you know, nicey-nice on both sides, right? Because then just kind of bite your tongue, you know, be careful what you say because it can be interpreted the wrong way. That's it, you know. So, you know, and it's think win-win. You know, we're almost finished the first half of the show.
Yeah.
And you want to think win-win, and you can do that personally in relationships, right? What's really important to them? Does that mean that much to me?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. And there's a balance, like you say, because I think immediately when you think negotiation, and say, you know, one of your core values as a human being is to bless other people, to add value to other people. You know, we pray that every day. Lord, help me bless others today. And how can I bless someone, Lord? And I'm maybe in this deal, this real estate deal, and I want to bless this person, but, you know, and there's that human, but, you know, I don't want to be taken advantage of. And I think we're always in that little bit of tug of war of, I think as a Christian, you know, or, you know, person of faith, I want to bless this person. I want to be a go-giver. I want to, you know, I want to live a lifestyle of generosity and not be in this, you know, what's in it for me all the time. But when you're talking about a house, there are things, you know, certain things, and I think there's a balance. And I think it occurs to me as I listen to you describe these scenarios that you literally become, you know, somebody's counselor, not necessarily therapist, but, you know, self-awareness
right.
is a big deal. And like you said, if somebody's not sure and they're complaining about this or that, it kind of becomes your, I guess, job in a way to point out, you know, some things and help them become more self-aware. So, it just dawned on me how fascinating being
That's
a real estate broker is. Yeah.
Yeah, it can be because you really get into a lot of things. So, you know, if you're a buyer, seller, agent, broker, you want to look at the outcome and then come up with solutions, right? But make it not one-sided because there's never just one person in a negotiations, right? There's always two.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, and it can apply to many, many situations constantly, all the time. And make everybody happy. But you can still do that and still be, you know, and go back to looking at, and then each side has non-negotiable items, and that, you know, you need to know what they are too. So say, because there are situations where there could be a time where you go, oh, I'm walking away from, just like buying a car, you know, when they're saying, okay, we're buying a car, but I know I'm going to want this. If they don't do it, that's, I don't really need the car that much. Is it that important to me? And I can walk away, and then they usually come back and say, hey, wait a minute, we'll throw this in now, you know. So there are times you have to do that too. So yeah, it's really, it's you're going to win more in the long run and get what you wanted in the long run if you can go into it with that attitude and realize there's so much more going on in that person's head than just this sometimes, you know, not with everybody, but with a lot of people.
Oh, yeah.
So you can take some of these skills and turn it over into your own life, too, and think about that today when you're dealing with your family or friends or whatever and say there's a sticking point that you're always on. Just try this one time. Go, okay, babe.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
What's really important? Try it and send it love and say, I'm going to do it differently this time. I'm not going to have the same reaction. They're probably going to be blown away. Like, what's going on here? Something's very different. But
Good stuff.
Realty
Universal Radio, or RealtyUniversal.com, I should say, is the website. The show is Realty Universal Radio. And, again, the first half, if you're just tuning in, just amazing real estate nuggets with Natalie Mullenix, president and founder of Realty Universal. And second half, we talk about people who are making a difference, and we're going to be joined by some folks from TellAsia.org, and we're going to take a break and be back on the other side and talk to some people who are making a difference in this world. So stay tuned.
When Marlon Shirley was 5 years old, he was in an accident and lost his foot, but he didn't lose his heart.
When you tackle a challenge that you just cannot even fathom tackling, when you accomplish that, the amount of integrity and the will and the heart that you'll get from that experience is what will set you up for your life.
In less time than it took Marlon Shirley to say that, he can now run 100 meters because today he's the world's fastest amputee. Overcoming. Pass it on from the Foundation for a Better Life at values.com.
Hi, I'm Michael Hyatt, professional blogger and public speaker. I'm also the chairman of Thomas Nelson Publishers, a husband, a father, a grandfather, and a Sunday school teacher. I often get asked, how do you get it all done? Two words, life plan. Sadly, I've met very few people who have a plan for their life. Most are passive spectators, watching their lives unfold one day at a time. They may plan their careers, the building of a new home, or even a vacation, but it never occurs to them to plan their life. This is why so many people end up discouraged, disillusioned, and wondering what went wrong. The good news is that it doesn't have to be that way. You can live your life on purpose starting today by going to michaelhyatt.com/life plan. There's three reasons why you need a life plan. Number one, it will give you clarity about where your life is headed. Number two, it'll keep you in balance when things get crazy. Number three, it'll give you peace of mind, knowing that you're addressing those aspects of your life that matter the most. Creating your personal life plan is not so much an ebook as it is a life planning experience. In the book, I'll take you through a visualization exercise that'll give you enormous clarity on what matters most. A five-step program for identifying where you are now and how to get from here to where you want to be. A weekly and quarterly process for keeping your life on plan and moving in the direction of your highest priorities. Two planning templates, a Word document, and a separate Excel document that will make it easier for you to create your plan and keep it up to date. You can't buy creating a personal life plan in a bookstore. You can't even buy it on the internet. There's only one way to get it, by subscribing to my free email newsletter. All you need to do is go to michaelhyatt.com/life plan and sign up for my free email updates. I'll then immediately email you the download link to this amazing free resource. Don't wait. You can start the life plan adventure today. Experience the power of living your life on purpose.
And welcome back to Realty Universal Radio. And Randy Zachary, my name, Natalie, I almost said Natalie Grant, who's a Christian artist. you could tell I still do some Christian radio. But Natalie Mullinex, president and founder of Realty Universal. And again, if you're just joining us, first half of the show, we talk about real estate. Second half of the show, we really want to motivate, mobilize, inspire people to, you know, be the change really in the world that they see. And I want to welcome back Douglas Frazier, and then he'll introduce our very special guest today. But Doug, thanks for coming back, man. Welcome.
It's great. You know, I love hearing you guys' show. I tuned in a little bit earlier and was listening to Natalie and the real estate, but I know you guys really, you know, pump out a show that touches a lot of different people in all over the place. And so it's a pleasure to be back with you, but it's even a greater pleasure to introduce my friend, Liana Cinquanta, the founder of Tell Asia. And I've been looking forward to this for quite a while because she has a tremendous amount of things to share with the ministry that she founded. So I'm just excited to listen more to her. We met about Liana, I think, almost over 2 years ago now. It's hard to imagine it's been that long, but wow. It's incredible how time flies by. And I had the opportunity to go up and work with her folks about a year ago. And I'll tell you what, when she shares what God is doing in her life and with the ministry there in India, it's going to be a blessing to everybody that listens.
Okay, so hey, Doug, what I'd like to do, and this is really interesting, kind of with you here this time, because I, for folks who are just tuning in, maybe kind of a quick recap of how you met her, how you got involved with them, and then if you would, go ahead and if you could and would ask some of the questions, kind of we'll almost let you do the interview here because you know Leanna and, you're familiar with the ministry. And, as we come up with questions, of course, we'll ask. But would you feel comfortable with that, man?
Sure, sure. I think I can handle that. You might want to hire me afterwards so I have something else to do.
Yeah, buddy. We could do that.
Yeah.
So how did you get involved? How did you get involved with TelAsia?
Well, we have I'll just call it a connector, and that is C. Peter Wagner. And he, is well known throughout the Christian world for just moving the church along in different areas. And she's, I'll say, the West Coast side, and I'm the Texas side, but she came under a commissioning out in California in the church of Cheyenne, I believe. And I saw that, and I said, oh, my goodness, but I want to be connected to people that are moving in the place where I've been called to work in India. And I come under the commissioning of Peter Wagner and Chuck Pierce here in Texas. And I said, I need to meet her. And I got in touch with her, and I don't know, Leanna, it was probably a couple months later, you were coming to Texas, and we got together at your friend's house and sat down, and I think we chatted for about 4 hours.
Yeah, that's great.
I said, I want to be involved in this and just do whatever I can to get the word out of what they're doing. And so that's basically what I'm doing. And that's, how you and I got together, Randy. You led into a question one day, and I started telling about TelAsia, and I said, my goodness, I've got to get Leanna on here and let her share of where she came from. So it's God put us together. I can't put it any other way.
Cool.
Thank you, Jeff.
Leanna, why don't you share a little bit about how you founded, how you were led to, why you were led to do this, and then maybe some of the beginnings. I mean, I'm on the website right now, and it's amazing everything that you guys are doing. And
Go ahead and share. It's the grace of God, and I thought I was going to be a horse trainer. God had used me in campus ministry when I was in college, and I was pretty advanced in my equestrian career. And my dad had just built me a 200-by-70-foot free-span riding arena for my college graduation gift in expectation that I'd come back from college and train horses. Well, I knew I was going to do some kind of, ministry of the gospel somewhere, somehow, and so I thought, well, maybe I'll do horse training and do campus ministry. And but I figured the Lord started leading me, and I felt like I needed some Bible training. So I said, Dad, give me a little time here. Give me 6 months. I'm going to go get some Bible training and come back. Well, I went to YWAM in Denver, Youth with a Mission in Denver. And, well, you might know that their motto is ruined for the ordinary. And long story short, God spoke to me very dramatically. It wasn't through anything that they taught me as such. It was just the Lord just broke in on me one night and just, boom, said, I'm sending you to the unreached nations. And I said, where'd this come from? And I said, anywhere but India.
Oh, my.
Next thing.
I have
so you know
I just
what the
have
next
to break.
Thing God said, right? Start in India.
Leanna, that's the first time I've heard that, because that's how God got me to India, too. I was invited, Diane and I, my wife, we were invited to come to India to ministry with two missionary couples. And we looked at each other. We really liked these couples, but we looked at each other and we said, no way, India. But I said, how can I tell these people that we really like that we don't want to come and go to India? And so I simply said, maybe someday. Well, God is always listening. And 6 months later, I was in the south of India just before the tsunami and the earthquake. So,
wow.
Oh, my. That's even more incredible.
Awesome. Well, then what happened next is the Lord led me. Well, I called up my dad and said, Dad, sell the horse facility. I'm not coming back to train horses. And that didn't go over too well. But he got over it and became my best supporter. And anyway, so then I said, God, where in India? As God started to lead, I believe when God gives you a vision and you say yes to that vision, I believe God wants to lead us step by step to make us the most fruitful we can be. And if we don't listen to him, we might still be fruitful, but maybe not as much as we could be. And so the very specific guidance the Lord began to give me, he showed me, I said, where in India? He showed me a dream. And in this 3 nights in a row, the same dream, I saw demons ruling over the nation of India from the Himalaya Mountains and the Ganges River area. And there was a great deal of detail in that. I don't have time to go into that. But it was very clear to me that, oh, I guess the stronghold over the nation is in the north. Well, then I began to study, because I was confused for a while because everybody goes to South India. But then I was like, wait a minute, there's hardly any Christians in North India. It's 0.01% Christian in the Ganges River area. It's considered the graveyard of Christianity. It's the origin of Hinduism, Buddhism, and Jainism, the three major world religions. It's the birthplace of 10 of India's 14 prime ministers. And so this is a very influential part of the nation. The Hindus say that where this part of India goes. It guides the nation. And the problem with that is it is guiding the nation into more idol worship, more corruption. It's guiding the nation into continuing to perpetrate the curse of poverty over the nation because of when we aren't following Christ, it results in the curse continuing over the nation. And another thing I recently came to know was we have of the 35 million destitute and at-risk children, at least 15,000, possibly 60,000 a year are trafficked. That's the source of the human trafficking problem in Mumbai, Calcutta, and Delhi, and other places, is just this border area between India and Nepal. And so all of that is under this dark, evil influence of the strongholds in that region. Mm. Well, that's how I knew I had to go into the toughest, darkest part of the nation to bring liberation and freedom through Christ to the people there. In 1996, I got on the plane with a one-way ticket. The Lord had shown me, don't be a traditional missionary. He showed me, you are going to be a servant of the native people, and you're going to live with the natives. Don't connect with any foreign missionaries. Just live with the indigenous people. Love them and find the few existing believers and raise them up to be the missionaries to their own people. And that is how I started, basically how we started in 1996.
Mm. Wow. Who are some of the people, Leanna, because I know that part of the story, but how did you find your strong guys that you've got that are really the Indian face that are the leaders?
Oh, beautiful story. This was October of 98, and I was now training little native people who had come to Christ and are simple little people. They didn't have any education. Sending them out in their home village to plant churches and to bring education to the children and different things. And I felt I need someone to manage this, to coordinate, and someone with a little education, maybe English language. And so I went to a pastor in town, and I said, hey, do you know anybody? There was a few churches in the city there, and one pastor had been there for a long time. And I said, do you know anybody you'd recommend to do this job? And he said, oh, yeah, my son. Because this was brand new international organization, you know, and maybe a good job. And his son was a wonderful young man. He'd just come from Bible college, an excellent Bible teacher, had been groomed in the urban church and very nice upbringing. And we worked together, and he did a great job. But the Lord I still don't understand this, but the Lord spoke to me and said he's not the one. And I went back to the pastor. I said, well, do you have anybody else? He says, oh, well, yeah, my stepson. And he was a wonderful, you know, brother in the Lord, and had just come from Bible school, and we did a great job. We worked together. He did a great job. The Lord said he's not the one. And I'm saying, come on, God, we've got 0.01% Christian, and you're being picky? Well, I go bow and feeling like the prophet Samuel going to Jesse, you got any more sons out there? Well, now the pastor is downcast, and he says, well, I got this. There's this little guy. He's a Hindu background and just came to the Lord out in the village, and he's out there tending the sheep, well, planting churches. And I said, bring him in. Let me meet him. And the next day I walked into that room, and we met eyes, and the Lord said, that's the one. There was no words transpired. The Lord said, that's the one. Skinny, scrawny little guy. And it turned out that he had been faithful to the call of God to come back from Bible school to this tough city of Varanasi to bring the gospel to his people. His Hindu relatives are beating him and starving him because they are upset because of his faith. And his wife has tuberculosis, and she's dying, and he has no money to take her to the hospital. Through that situation, he's persevering, going out, bringing the love of Jesus to the people in the villages, and just waiting on the Lord for what God would do next. And that was when the Lord put us together, and we started launching out into ministry.
Wow, yeah. That's so cool.
So
what
he's
God
no
does.
Longer skinny. Now we call him King David. He's truly developed into a mighty leader for his people, and he's highly respected throughout the northern part of India.
Wow. That
the thing
is
that,
so cool.
The thing that I saw, Leanna, from David was how he has taken up some of your other young leaders and put such a heart in them, you know, for just going out. And the things that I saw, particularly going into the with some of these young guys that were our guides, like Jitendra, you know, these guys have such a love for their people and are willing just to basically to do anything to see that the people are reached. And that's
right.
The heart that has gone
right.
out.
That's what happened to us in the year 2008. We had come up, every year we'd see more churches planted and children reached and educated. In the year 2008, we had about 500 new house-based churches planted, about 15,000 new believers. And we looked out there and said, this is going too slow, because we got 200 million people out there that have never heard the gospel. We have 35 million destitute children, many of them being taken into sex trafficking. They face a horrible future. How are we going to reach all these people? And we said, let's start working together. We went out across this whole Gangetic Plain, and we found anybody we could find that was a Christian. And we cast a vision called the 2020 Network, and that is to see the Gangetic Plain grow from currently 1% Christian to 20% Christian by the year 2020. And that was, so we launched that in latter 2008, and then it's been about 4 years with many organizations, churches, and leaders working together, and we have seen over 350,000 people commit their lives to Jesus Christ.
Wow, God bless you.
Oh, my goodness. So are you tied in with YWAM? It sounds like they were kind of foundational in the vision coming forth. Are you kind of one of the maybe missions that YWAM kids come to? Or
no,
are you guys
we aren't directly connected. I have a great respect for YWAM, and they have just such an anointing for discipling young people into Christ. They provided the atmosphere in which I was able to receive my calling. But then the Lord wanted us to remain really separate and interdenominational, especially separate from any direct mission-type organization. Because our focus is a little bit different, where we exclusively raise up Native people. We welcome teams to come over. We love teams to come over, like Doug came over and worked with us. But But our main focus, when a team comes over, we say, you are here to see how you, like me, we are all servants of the Native people. True Indigenous ministry should be led by the Native people from the start. And so that's what we're committed to seeing that.
Wow.
That's important, yeah. And that just saves so much, effort. I mean, really, because, I heard of an organization called the Haggai Institute over on Maui, where that's what they do. They bring, and it's, they bring people, leaders from third world countries, and kind of come over for 6 to 8 weeks and brainstorm new technologies, how to share the gospel, and basically send them back. And the point is, you're pouring into them because they're the people, they're indigenous.
That's good.
And that's the concept, is that those people are already there, speak the language, have the relationships. And I think, that's so smart. I mean, Now, you guys have schools. I'm on the website. And you guys talk about what you your ministry to kids. It looks like you've got all kinds of education going on and whatnot.
Yeah, well, we started in 2007 with rural education centers, which there's no building. It's just a little teacher under a tree with a blackboard hung up on a branch. Literally.
Wow.
And a bunch of rough kids that hardly have any clothes that sitting there learning, and some of them are working in the field during the day or babysitting. Some of them get to go to some kind of school, but the village schools are so bad in India that they don't learn to read and write even. So the parents just love to send their kid to our rural education centers it's an after-school kind of two-hour program. Where they really do learn to read and write, and, of course, we give them the gospel. And so, and within the first couple of years of that, we had around 23,000 kids come to Christ and also learned reading and writing. And now we're on a new batch, and we've got some new education centers just started last year. But as we're doing that, and we want to continue growing that, we're looking out there, and some of these families, they are just so destitute. And this is where you get into the human trafficking stuff, where the dad is either run off or dead or drunk, and the mom has five kids and no income, and the women in the village have no income. They are just destitute. And so then somebody comes up to her and says, well, I'll give your 13-year-old daughter a good job in the city, and she doesn't know enough to say no to that. And her daughter is taken taken into the brothels. So that's just one example of how it happens. But it's usually these really desperate families that are just really poor. So our pastors are all, now with the 2020 Network, we have pastors and Christian leaders all stretched all across this border area between Nepal and India. And we can observe and see the families that are highly at risk for their kids being trafficked. But I don't know how to raise money for all children, and we got some schools, very successful schools in the village, and we got a little orphanage, but it's your traditional one that has to be supported. And I said, God, you got to show us how to make a self-sufficient orphanage, but not one of these village ones out in the boondocks where they buy a bunch of land and you've got a few kids out there or a lot of kids, but they're going to the local school, they're not learning English, or they're learning it at a very low level because it's out in the village, you can't get any good teachers, they're not exposed to an urban or a suburban lifestyle, and they're not really being raised up to be future leaders. I said, I don't want to do it that way. I believe God will enable us to raise these kids from the gutter. I mean from pre-trafficking or street kids. I mean completely with nothing, and make them the next doctors and governors and business leaders of their nation. And so what we've now have a business plan, and it's two-thirds of the way there. We've purchased suburban land 7 miles from one of India's first Sam's Clubs. That tells you how valuable this land is. Okay, it's a booming suburban area just out of the metropolitan city of Lucknow, 4 million population. And we got some money raised, and we are going to be building a school for 1,000 kids and a medical clinic. The wealthy Hindu and Muslim families want to send their kids to a really good Christian school because that's where they know they get a good education. Well, so we'll put up this Christian school, and they will pay the fees, which will generate revenue, to support 100 orphan kids at the same high standard of living, proper middle-class living standards, so they can be raised up for a bright future.
That's fantastic.
Wow. And you guys, right now, I'm looking again at the website, and you say two-thirds of the way there. So there's still a need, and folks can help support finish this project, right?
Exactly. The land was about $200,000, just the land, 1.7 acres. We've got that land. That was a miracle right there. I have $100,000 in the bank, and I've got a pledge for $100,000 when I raise another $200,000. So we need $200,000. Man, I mean, I'll admit this is phase one. This isn't the entire project is about $1.3 million. But we are so close to launching the school, K through sixth grade, and the medical clinic. Once that's up, then we'll be moving on to build the children's home. From the first year of operation, it is projected this project will generate revenue to support itself plus 15 orphan kids.
Wow.
From the get-go, it'll be sustainable plus helping us to support kids.
So, again, we've got 4 minutes here, so I really want to make sure that we get the contact info so folks are listening can help. Again, go to tellasia.org, and I believe if you click on, is it Blue Haven Village or Children's Home?
Yeah.
Blue
Haven Village is the name of the big project that we're developing. If someone like to help with that, click on Blue Haven Village. If you want to help support an existing child, normal orphan support, you can click on Blue Haven Children's Home.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. And again, tellasia.org is the website. And this is, James, we're told that, pure religion is helping widows and orphans. And you don't get more pure in terms of service to our Lord than what you guys are doing. And when I read about the numbers that 40% of the population are children, and when you describe, just as you walked us through that little scenario of how 13-year-old girls get caught up in trafficking because they're starving to death, and and somebody comes along and offers them, quote unquote, a great job in the city, and they go, and it's heartbreaking, and I think, the least we can do. Obviously, people, we ask you to pray for them, but we also ask you to, and it's not a thing of, well, let's see what the Lord says, because He already says to do it, to help these kids, and so you can help it. You can help. I'm going to get my preach on, Doug. I'm going to get my preach on here in a minute.
Keep on going, Randy. You're doing good.
I'm just saying, you don't have to ask the Lord if you should help. You're told in the Bible to help these children, and this is a ministry that's doing it, and it's tellasia.org. We've got literally 2 minutes. Anything else that you wanted to share, Leanna?
Well, I'd just like to share with your audience that the word the Lord gave me when He sent me to northern India is, where, as Joshua chapter 1, verse 3, wherever the sole of your foot shall tread, I have given you the land. And, I mean, it doesn't take a special person to change the world. It just takes obedience to God. And what He's calling you to do, wherever you are, in whatever circumstance He's planted you, say, God, here I am, use me. And He wants to fulfill that scripture through you, to do abundantly above all you could ask or think, to give you a promised land for your possession. And I'm talking about making a difference in the world for the principles of the kingdom of God. And I believe every one of us has a destiny and a calling to make a difference in the world. And that scripture is for you, wherever the sole of your foot shall tread by faith in Jesus Christ, God is going to give you transformation and impact in the world.
Wow. Can't add anything else. You, that's beautiful. That's amazing. Thank you again. It's tellasia.org is the website.
Wow.
Leanna, Doug, thank you again.
Thank you both. That was just wonderful.
Thank you, Randy and Doug.
Weekend. Thank you so much. God bless you, and you're amazing. You're an angel. So it's just thrilled to have you on here.
We're speechless.
Really, I'm sitting here going, wow, this is just awesome. That was just, that's why I was very quiet. I didn't want to say, you're just awesome. And thank you, thank God.
Huh.
And we're thrilled to, we'll get involved too. We're going to go to that site, and anybody on here should go and see what we can do. And thank you. And to everybody out there, I wish you peace. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us on Realty Universal Radio. Our hope is that you are enlightened, encouraged, and mobilized to be an agent of change. Realty Universal is on Facebook. Join us there. Follow us also on Twitter at Realty Universal. And for more information, you can go to RealtyUniversal.com. Make it a great day.